Welcome to the Payments Podcast, where we talk to innovators about how they're reinventing, reimagining, and recreating the payments ecosystem.
Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Ken Paul, CEO of Roam. Hi, Ken. Thanks for joining me today.
Sure, Karen. Thank you, and thanks for a great event recently at Harvard. That Innovation Project was a fantastic event for us.
Thank you. Awesome. Thanks for saying that. So we're here to catch up, as we always do, on the monthly mobile point of sale MPOS tracker and some of the insights that we gathered and anxious to get your impressions about. So let's talk about the first observation, and that is what we're seeing happen in the developed and developing markets. And I think what's interesting, at least from our point of view, is that the market is kind of moving in two directions. Developed markets seem to be going to tablets. The merchants in the developing markets seem to be embracing tablet-type solutions, while the emerging markets really are coalescing around phones with dongles. Are you seeing the same thing? And if so, what are the implications of those trends in looking more globally at the MPOS ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I look at it, I believe that, you know, what happened in the U.S. is being patterned in the rest of the world, and it's moving even faster because they have the benefit of looking at how things have developed here. So, you know, our view is that in the U.S., really, most of the activity, as we all know, has happened with phones and dongles, and that's really what I would call the low-hanging fruit. It's the nomadic applications, the service people that are going out to homes and businesses, the delivery people, the home sales organizations, the fundraising, all the applications or use cases where, you know, typically there was either no card present acceptance or they really didn't have an entire mobile app to be able to accommodate some of those use cases. So those were the low-hanging fruit here in the U.S. and where I think a lot of the volume went. And we're now moving into what we see as sort of MPOS phase two, or we're more than moving into it, we're into it, where now mobile is impacting the core traditional market and inside the store, and it's affecting it in a way where people are doing line busting and personal shopping and even using mobile as a technology right at the countertop in some cases with tablets. So it's really taking over not just those niche or low-hanging fruit areas, but the traditional areas it's impacting as well. So outside the U.S., I think they're still mainly in phase one, where it's phones and it's dongles, or in many cases a chip and pin or chip and signature device, not necessarily a magstripe dongle. But I think it's moving faster because they see what's happening here in the U.S. and they're moving. The phase two and you know, MPOS phase one and phase two are getting a little blurred overseas, where they're both starting to happen fairly quickly thanks to what's happened here in the U.S.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about a concept that I think is a little related to what you just described, and that's this notion of omnichannel, and particularly the larger retailers that are now looking at tablets and mobile solutions to create this seamless experience for their consumers across all channels. What are your observations with respect to the role of MPOS in helping retailers deliver the omnichannel ambition they all have?
Yeah, we're engaged with a lot of large retailers, as you know, and when you talk to the CIOs or the heads of store automation, they're very challenged. The development and resource requirements to maintain, you know, physical POS interfaces, MPOS now, and their e-commerce websites is challenging, and it's not only the cost, but it's the consistency that they want to, the challenge of consistency for the consumer. And layered on top of that, I would say, is the more sophistication, the higher sophistication that these consumers have in terms of their own technology that they've become accustomed to. So when they interact with these retailers, whether it's inside the store, from their home or on their mobile, they're expecting a certain level of consistency and technical interface that they've been accustomed to in other applications. So it's really challenging these retailers to, and I think this is also ties in with the tablet discussion, in that when they can move towards tablets, both for mobile and for in-store traditional POS, then they can, try to make that look more consistent with what the consumers are seeing from their home on their tablets or on their PCs, and it giving them the leverage of being able to have more of a common development across the board. So I think, I think it's a very challenging shift because these things came in at different times. So in a lot of cases, there's a lot of legacy work and that went into what the retailers are providing on the e-commerce side or on the MPOS side, and now the challenge is to bring them all together. And that's something that we see happening, at pretty much every major retailer out there.
So one of the things that you mentioned early on is the ability for consumers, obviously, to have devices in store, and now this ability for the merchants to have these mobile solutions in store as well to assist in the shopping process. One of the things that we reported on recently was the perception that consumers have about using beacon-like check-in and wireless kinds of technologies to track them when they're in the store, even though, of course, merchants are very interested in being able to push promotions to consumers in that way. What are you hearing from retailers who are interested in using the technology but perhaps not quite sure how to do it in the best possible way so it doesn't turn off the consumer?
Yeah, I would say that from the retailer's perspective, or those that we're talking to, they've been tracking consumers for a while. The consumers just haven't known it as well as they do now. So one of the things that we, rolled out through retail, especially mid to large retailers over the past few years, has been Wi-Fi access in the stores. And a lot of that is not just in the interest of providing, free Wi-Fi as a service. They also gain intelligence on who's in the store, even if it's anonymous, and where they're going. Are they checking, Amazon while they're in their store, or what types of things are they looking up? So that's been going on for a while. I think what's changed is that the retailers are now with connecting with the consumer's mobile device in the store, are able to deliver offers or promotions or start communicating with them. And that does make consumers nervous, because that's really their first awareness that the retailer's really tracking them. But I think the key is that there's got to be a strong value proposition for the consumer. So if they just feel like, oh, all of a sudden I'm being tracked and I'm getting offers, but they're not really viewed as valuable, then that's going to backfire. But if the retailers are actually delivering to the consumer something that they deem of value, making the shopping experience more valuable, then I think that's going to work out fine in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, because it's so very new, and I think a question is whether consumers want the interruption at all. I know, there are some times when that for me would be helpful, but other times when I'm kind of on a mission and I want to get in and out, and being interrupted is not something that I would find particularly valuable. So I think we've got a lot of learning to do.
Yeah, I'm a wine shopper as an example, and I have some experience with this, where you'll be in the aisle and I might look up on a website what a particular wine's going for in the rest of the country, and if at that time that retailer can you know, let me finish doing that, but also remind me that if I, you know, fill up half a case or a full case, that I'm going to get 10 or 15% off, or I'm going to get this additional incentive on a particular wine that I'm looking at. You know, it gets really tricky where to draw the line, but that is a value, because I'd rather, you know, if I'm interested in a particular wine, I'd rather, you know, buy it right then and there and not have to go order it online and wait 2 weeks to get it shipped to me.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, that's a good example of something that is valuable, because you're taking an action and getting information that is relevant. I think there are a lot of situations, though, where it seems a little bit more random, where you're just getting pinged with offers that may not really have anything to do with anything other than where you happen to be standing in a store. I think that's where we just need to kind of refine things a little bit.
That's exactly the gray area that I think could be the difference of you know, creeping customers out versus really making them feel like they're valuable customers and there's worthwhile offers for them.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about data. One of the reasons that a lot of the smaller merchants in particular are so interested in the MPOS platforms is the ability to gather data that was very hard for them to get before. What's your sense of whether merchants are really using that data? Are they finding it valuable? Are they just kind of getting it and don't know what to do with it?
You know, that's a great question, because we're challenged with that in our company, in that, you know, what we find is that the larger the merchants are, the more staff they are and resource they are to do something with that data. And certainly the largest tier one retailers are mining that data and doing a lot with it. And as you go down the pyramid into the smaller merchants, I think you get less and less of that. We have a lot of data, for example, on our platform that we provide to our customers, and we see some of the small businesses using it extensively once they start really getting their feet wet with it. And then we see other people that just seem too busy or shorthanded to really take the time to dig into it. So I think a couple thoughts there. One is we all have to look for these sort of killer applications that get people using the data. What are, you know, some really simple things that can be presented very easily that will sort of get the hook into some of these smaller and medium-sized business to start using the data and what their appetite for more. And I think from a vendor perspective, there's really a huge opportunity there for the companies out there that can package information down to that level, the small to mid-tiers of the market, in a way that they can really use and act on it and not have to, you know, have a large staff like a large retailer has to in order to mine that data.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think the ability to make it easy for the smaller merchant, you know, who's already resource constrained, to almost systematically take that data and put it into an application that pushes something out that's of value to particular customer groups is where an analytics tool would be very useful. I know those are the kinds of things that Roam looks to add and enhance to your platform now.
Yeah, like as an example, we threw some fraud related work that we're doing, we've started to add in certain velocity checking capabilities to see where you have similar or same card numbers or consumers coming in and making multiple visits or charging, and the foundation of that was just trying to make sure that there was no fraud going on. But that also can, the reverse side of that is it can be mined for your most frequent customers, because you know, you could have the flexibility and package it up so that you know, that time span could be anything, like a month's time, a week's time, a day's time. So you could be looking at which one, you know, who some of your most frequent customers are, not just looking at it from a risk perspective, but a loyalty perspective. But packaging some of those capabilities up to these small merchants is really where the opportunity exists, I think.
Yep. Anything else, Ken, that you've seen? I know you've been out and about the last month in a variety of different venues and talking to merchants. Any other things that you think you've heard in any of those conversations that would be worth talking about?
I think we just continue to see that you can't look at this business as, although payments is in the center of it and it's a required component, we're just seeing more and more value-added suppliers and customers wanting more and more capabilities built around the payments function. So, you know, we've been talking and predicting that this